morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. Governor Susana Martinez called lawmakers back to the Capitol this week to take another stab at funding state government. The Republican governor and the legislature, which is controlled by Democrats, have been at odds over how to fill a budget hole created in part by sagging oil and gas revenues. Martinez rejected the budget they sent her this winter, which depended on raising some taxes in order to cover state spending. Martinez then said she might okay raising some taxes to balance the budget, but only if lawmakers also approved a major reform of the gross receipts tax structure. My first guest this morning is State Representative Patricia Lundstrom, a Gallup Democrat. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, hey, good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, we are glad that you could take this time because yesterday was a whirlwind and today is supposed to be pretty crazy, too. The session opened at noon yesterday. Things moved very quickly. One of the first things we saw was leaders in the House and Senate attempting to override Martinez's vetoes of her line item vetoes of funding for higher education and the legislative branch. Those vetoes failed. But you're in the House. The margin is actually quite small. There aren't that many more Democrats than Republicans there. And in order to override the veto, you needed two-thirds of them. Why try to override if you thought you probably weren't going to be able to do it?
Well, I think it's a fundamental statement that we don't agree with those vetoes. Yesterday in committee, we had three college presidents present to the committee about the devastation to the higher education system since the vetoes. And I think it just that statement needed to be made. We needed to try, which is the first avenue, to override the vetoes. As you know, we tried to take this to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court felt that we did not have a case that was ripe, was the word that they used. So we tried the veto override. We want to demonstrate, in case this has to go back to court, hey, you know, we've done everything we need to do. We are very, very concerned about the impacts to higher ed, to the students, and I'll tell you, I was devastated to hear some of those things yesterday. So we're going to do everything we can to get money back into higher ed and also into our own branch, for goodness sake.
Now, Martinez said she didn't intend to actually take money away from higher ed, that she just meant this, you know, as an easy way to get rid of a big chunk of the budget and that she always intended to put it back. So why is this so difficult?
I think it's. I think it was a mistake. I know that there's been a lot of concern raised with the governor's office regarding that veto. I know that there's been numerous, it's blowback on the fourth floor regarding that veto. And I don't understand why someone would say they didn't mean to do something. There's 20 days to look at this bill. After the end of last session, we provided a revenue package, a menu of choices for her. She didn't choose any of those, and I just think that that was a lapse in judgment to be able to take out an entire system like that.
Well, you guys made a statement with your veto override. I suppose she was making a statement with her vetoes. But so yesterday, there was you guys passed a bill that would patch the budget hole for right now with an unusual and complicated mechanism. It would essentially take the state's ability to borrow money for infrastructure projects and borrow the money to balance the budget right now, but then we have to pay that money back over the next 10 or 20 years. Is that right?
No. What ends up happening is we are going to use our severance tax bonding capacity. We had projected it to be over $100 million last January in session, which is the other concern that I want to raise is that we did ask for a consensus revenue report. We asked John Arthur Smith and I sent the administration a letter. You need to know what your start point is. So we had to use, because we got no response, we had to use December revenue estimates. So in December, it showed that we had over $100 million available in bonding capacity. What ends up happening is we then transfer that capacity through what's called a sponge bond. It's an overnight bond transfer that then we can convert it to the general fund for operational expenses. What ends up happening then is that we just don't use it again, say in the next couple of years. So we're not, it's not like it's a loan to the general fund then. We just don't go back and tap into it. It just keeps building.
So a lot of people I saw, you know, I watched some of the debate yesterday and I saw folks, you know, tweeting about it. Many lawmakers said, I hate this idea, and then voted for it. Why do people hate something, and then why did they vote for it?
Well, because it's not traditionally used for operational costs. It's traditionally used for infrastructure. And we get a very good return on investment when we're building things such as roads and bridges and buildings. And that's an immediate hit to the economy. In other words, you'll see your gross receipts tax base grow with construction projects. That's why they don't like it. I mean, I'm not, you know, jumping up and down myself either about that. But in an environment when you're not allowed to look at new revenue enhancements, you have to look at what you already have, and that is a funding source for us. We need to fund higher education. We need to fund the legislative branch of government, and that is the bulk of where the money is coming from, is through the capital outlay piece. I think that was about $71 million that would be put into the operating budget.
So the Senate also passed, I guess both houses passed, on a largely bipartisan vote, a package that would increase the gas tax by 5 cents per gallon and increase the sales tax on cars in order to shore up depleted reserves. This sponge bond deal would patch the budget, even though nobody likes it. It would
right.
patch the budget hole. But then that leaves the state with essentially no money left, you know, in reserves. So in order to put a little money back in the bank, you guys came up with these slight tax increases here. But isn't this the same thing that you did in the session this winter that Martinez already vetoed?
It was with the gas tax. I believe that was 10 cents, though, in January.
So you cut it in half to five, right?
We cut it in half, and we also made it very clear that part of it goes to road development and into the reserve. The excise tax is something that was brought forth, and yes, she did veto that. We brought that forth again because it's so incredibly low in our state compared to other states. And I believe the other issues were swaps and sweeps from programs. In other words, we're not going to issue projects like water projects. We're going to hold off for a year and then keep that money, you know, for the budget. We need the reserve not to be below zero. And the reason is that we don't want to lose or have a downgrade in our bond rating. We want to make sure that our reserve has at least 1, maybe 2% in it. The best would be 5. So these tax measures are in place to help build that reserve.
Callers, we are talking about the special legislative session that's happening in Santa Fe today. Should lawmakers overhaul the tax system during just a couple of days, or should they wait? We want to know what you think, because we're talking about that in a few minutes. So call us now, toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. Representative Lundstrom, it seems to me that what is happening here is that people are tripping over themselves not to pass or sign anything called a tax increase, but instead doing things that are too complicated for any normal human to understand, but that are basically not good fiscal policy?
Well, I'll tell you what the issue is that comprehensive tax reform means that you are eliminating all the exemptions, and that you're trying to stabilize one rate for gross receipts. On the surface, that sounds great. I'd love to see it. But that means if you lower the gross receipts rate, you have to figure out how you're going to make the budget. So you're looking for money, additional funding, at least for the first couple of years, based on what you took away by lowering the gross receipts level. So we're concerned about that, and we're concerned about the fact that we don't know what the impacts are going to be and what that multiplier could be. Absolutely, we need tax reform.
But
to do it in 2 days doesn't make sense to anybody.
This is a proposal, we should say, that comes from Representative Jason Harper, a Republican from Rio Rancho, and he's going to be on the show later in the hour, so we'll hear from him about that bill. It would essentially, you know, the gross receipts is the tax that you pay on stuff you buy in the store. You pay it when you have your house re-roofed. You pay it on services. You pay it to your accountant when he does your taxes at the end of the year. And it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 cents on the dollar, depending on where you live. Representative Harper's bill would drop it by, I guess, about one percentage point across the board. And then he says, close a bunch of loopholes in order to bring more money back into it. You know, the state auditor put out a statement just this morning saying that there's $1 billion in tax breaks in the state code that we are not collecting money, and we don't really understand whether they're creating jobs, whether they're strengthening the economy, or whether they're working or not. Do you agree that we have a lot of tax breaks that we aren't really sure are working?
That's correct, and that's been one of the discussions that the legislature has had regarding tax credits in general, or tax breaks as you refer to them, is that do they really work? You know, what is that measurement to show success? And there's not been a particular agreement on that, but I do know that in some cases they've worked very well. And I mean, you could look at all kinds of these incentives and decide, gee, this one works, this one doesn't. But I don't know where the state auditor gets the number $1 billion. You know, that's a nice number to throw around. But in the absence of really evaluating those things, I don't know that that's correct.
Well, he's got a report that he just released today, and we'll post that on our website in case people want to look at it. And I think he's talking, I'm just guessing because I read it briefly this morning, but I think he's looking at breaks, credits and things like that that go beyond just gross receipts tax. But I want to ask you about this idea of taxing internet sales. New Mexico is not a state where people who sell stuff to New Mexicans online are required to pay the tax, although Amazon.com, where I buy tons of stuff every dang week, they recently agreed to voluntarily collect that tax and give it to us. But people buy from a lot of other big companies and get stuff shipped online, from furniture to, you know, everything. The estimate is that taxing stuff we buy on the internet could bring in more than $100 million every year. There seems to be a lot of enthusiasm for this because that's a lot of money, and it's a pretty attractive chunk. I mean, that's basically the hole in the budget that we've been looking at right there. But is this, I mean, obviously politics plays a part here. Is this a new tax, or is this closing a loophole?
Well, from my perspective, it's closing a loophole because it makes it a fair playing field for other businesses that compete with those internet-based businesses. I know that there is a lot of sales that are happening at that point, and the reason we know that is because we track sales out of each county annually, and when you see a downturn in sales, but then an uptick in population growth, that doesn't correlate. You would think that it would be growing. Or when you see new businesses that go into a county, you would think that gross receipts would be growing. And that's not always the case. I mean, you just yourself talked about how you buy tons of stuff on the internet. I think anybody who has access to broadband and has a computer does the same thing.
Yeah.
But I believe that makes our local businesses that have a brick and mortar business, so to speak, have to pay employees and have to pay all the property taxes and everything else in an uncompetitive position. So it makes sense to me that we would close that loophole.
Representative, we have to take a break and let you go. But before we do, what happens next? What happens today at the legislature?
Well, I know that last night, House Bill 1, my bill, the General Appropriations Act, went up to the fourth floor. Governor has 3 days to act on that. The spending package also went up to the governor last night. I know today in the House, we're going to hear one of the spending bills. I believe it's Senator Clemente Sanchez's bill in tax committee. Then that'll come to the floor. I also know that Representative Harper's bill has been scheduled for 9 o'clock this morning, also to be heard. So, I mean, we'll still hear some bills and see whether or not some of these things are doable. But for me, the most important thing was getting the general appropriations bill up to the governor and getting that capital outlay bill up to the governor, because that's the revenue source. That at least breaks even for us.
So if the governor doesn't agree with you, are you going to go back to the Supreme Court and ask them to force reinstatement of funding for higher ed in the legislative branch?
Or we may just come back and say, you know what, let's try another veto override, or we'll go to the courts. But we're going to have to get those higher ed institutions funded. I think the this veto and the impact to them has pushed us back 10 years.
Representative,
I mean, it's going to take a long time.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we wish you luck in this special session.
All righty. Thanks for the call.
Take care. We're going to take a quick break, but we want to hear from you when we come back. Would you mind paying higher taxes on gas by 5 cents a gallon and some things you buy online if the sales tax overall were lower and more fair? And we closed some loopholes, got rid of some credits. Do you think the government is too big and you want to see spending shrink instead? Let us know. The number is toll-free, 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or follow us on Twitter at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from DaVita Medical Group, who believes everything matters. They provide access to primary care doctors and specialists at 15 locations across Albuquerque and Rio Rancho. Doctor listings are found at DaVitaMedGroupNM.com.
Gabriela Montero has been playing the piano concerto by Edvard Grieg since she was 11, so she just bought a new copy of the music.
My original one I've used all these years has Hello Kitty stickers all over it, so I said, okay, time to grow up, you
know? Of course. Yeah.
Coming up, Gabriela Montero in concert on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I'm here with Trip Jennings, the Executive Director of New Mexico In-Depth. Welcome to the show, Trip.
Hi, Gwyneth. Thanks for inviting me.
Were you glued to the session yesterday like I was?
I was actually sitting in the media gallery of the House for most of the day watching stuff go on. So, yes, I was like riveted.
I was trying to do seven other things, but I could not stop paying attention. The situation between the governor and the legislature, everyone has started to call this game of chicken. You know, who's going to back down? She won't have any new taxes, the legislature says, but we can't, you know, we can't fix this thing either by having a regular budget or shoring up reserves. There's no way. There's not enough money. We can't do it anymore. You know, what do you think here? What are the political nuances of this? Who wins or loses when they're playing this game of chicken?
Well, I think one needs to think about also the Supreme Court. So some of the stuff that they did yesterday was the veto overrides. As you recall, they went to the Supreme Court saying that, you know, hey, she has vetoed all this stuff. The Supreme Court said the situation is not ripe, by which they meant they had not exhausted all their options. So they did veto overrides, which were not successful on the vetoes yesterday. And then they've now kind of created these new bills that they're going to send up to the governor. And if she vetoes them, there may be another Supreme Court, another lawsuit, actually, the Supreme Court. As far as who wins and loses, I think she's going to fund the higher ed. There's no question about that. So, but who wins and loses?
Now, it became apparent in the last week that Martinez really wanted lawmakers to take up this overhaul of the gross receipts tax, essentially the sales tax that we impose on products and services here. And again, we're going to talk to Representative Jason Harper in a few minutes. He's sponsoring that thing. But you've been watching this legislature for a long time now. This bill is 432 pages long. Mm-hmm. They got it yesterday. Mm-hmm. Does this legislature take up 432-page bills and pass them in 2 days?
As you know, in 2013, they did pass a large tax bill in the last 30 minutes of the session. But what has happened with the 2013 bill is there were a couple of provisions that they did not project correctly. So they had to go back and fix it in 2014 and 2015 or whatever. So we've got a much larger bill here with 432 pages where you have a lot of provisions that would close, reduce exemptions, deductions, credits, as I understand it. And so there's probably a lot more discussion to be had about the consequences, what happens in the real world when these taxes are these exemptions or deductions are closed or reduced. Is that going to bring in as much money as one thinks or less money or actually cost the state more? And so this is where actually the state of New Mexico had a fine tradition of a tax expenditure report. These are what exemptions, deductions, how much does it cost the state to actually exempt certain taxes or parts of taxes? I think there are a lot of people who really think about tax policy deeply and profoundly, and Jason Harper is one of them. He's a very smart guy who are a little concerned about, like, what are the consequences of this thing? And the balance has to be, you know, we need to be thoughtful and think about this deeply. At the same time, you have this hanging out there. You've been up to the legislature. What this is the tax code is full of sacred cows.
Oh, yeah.
And so the question is, whose cow is going to get gored?
Well,
and lobbyists come out.
Let me bring on Andrew Oxford from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Andrew, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Gwen.
I want to recap something that Tripp just said, because he was there in 2013. We were there in 2013. And what he said was, yes, the legislature is capable of passing a giant package in 30 minutes if they want to, something they have, you know, maybe looked at a lot, it's just a few of them in private and kind of negotiated and brought to the floor and said, this is the thing, we've got to do it, the bell's going to ring, pass it now. But that has come back to bite them in the caboose a little bit, because it wasn't as thoroughly vetted as it would have been if they had looked at it the entire session long. Do you think that history of the rushed 2013 tax package is on people's minds this year as they are weighing whether or not to do this giant overhaul of the tax system in this session that's expected to last 2 days?
Well, I think there are a combination of things here. One, of course, is, you know, memory of what happened in 2013. But two, you have to remember this is all happening against the backdrop of really a financial crunch for the state government. There's not a lot of room for error in overhauling the tax code right now. The state's general fund is running very low. There's a fear that, even in the best case, you'd have reserves next year. The state would basically have less cash than would be optimal. In turn, there's fear that would that creditors would look would really frown on that the state could see its credit rating downgraded. And so there's a lot of hesitance, I think, to just given the uncertainty around the state's finances as a whole, to try and go in and overhaul the tax code, because if you're off, if you're wrong, the state could see a big dip in revenue that it really can't afford right now. And Representative Harper has talked about sort of, you know, phasing this in so that, there'd be time to assess for mistakes. But still, this is a tough time to talk money at all here at the Roundhouse. And then, like Tripp said, too, when you start talking about exemptions, You know, the lobbyists really fill these committee hearings. They're really here working the roundhouse. Everybody has a tax exemption they want to keep. Each one is there for a reason. And it's just politically difficult at any time to try and untangle those, to try and undo those.
There's a building full of people who do not want this to happen right now, I guess.
Exactly.
We have on the phone Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, good morning and welcome to the show.
Yes, what I have noticed about these sessions is that we have these so-called special sessions year after year. Isn't this our fourth year in a row having an extended special session? And, you know, you just talked about, what is that, they had this, 140-page law that they crammed in 2 days? And so, you know, it's like... You know, our 1 and 2 month sessions established 100 years ago is failing us, obviously. You know, why do we have to make those, you know, complicated laws and pass it in 2 days? And this is going to be a 2 day. You know, we need to change it and make it a 5 month session every year and pay our legislator a full time job, because we're the only state, very last one, that has an all volunteer. Legislature. We're the only one.
Sarah, thank you for bringing that up. Thank you so much. And Tripp, we haven't had a special every year for the past 4 years, I don't think, but maybe in the last two, there have been several. Martinez has had more than more in the past few years than we saw in the early part of her session. But, you know, the argument against having a 5 month session is that a lot of people like it that New Mexico doesn't mess with the laws very much, that it actually takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to change laws here.
Right. And I think there are people who advocate what Sarah is talking about. Gary Carruthers, actually, a former governor who's now NMSU chancellor, has, you know, he was governor and he was pushing for legislative pay and other things, other reforms. Changing, you know, giving legislative pay salaries to lawmakers, I think that was voted down four
times. We don't have the money to pay for anything right now. We're not going to pay those lawmakers right now, I'm sure they're saying. Let me, Andrew, ask you, you brought up Gary Carruthers' trip, and Representative Lundstrom alluded to this but didn't name him as one of the university presidents who was up in Santa Fe yesterday saying, please fund these universities. We are freaking out. Andrew, there has been a big ruckus over the past, well, since the regular session this winter about the regents, and you wrote about this week. You know, Martinez said the Senate's refusal to consider her appointments for university regents was a violation of their constitutional duty. She said this was part of the reason that she vetoed the funding for higher ed. And then we've seen this fuss, you know, Jack Fortner, who had been a regent for 18 years, served under three governors, resigned suddenly on Tuesday. And Martinez appointed his replacement, Alex Romero, the former CEO of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce, in a whirlwind. What is going on here? This sounds like it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, and pretty intense battle on the side of everything else that's going on. You have this real push to by the governor to confirm her picks for members of the UNM Board of Regents. She's really reshaped that board and has wanted to continue to shape that board. And so when she picked two people to serve on that board ahead of the legislative session, you know, her administration really pushed to get them confirmed during this 60-day session. You know, that didn't happen. She did withdraw one of those, or one of those nominees withdrew, actually, in the middle of the session. That was the former House Speaker Don Tripp. You know, he couldn't constitutionally take that role of regent at that point. And so there was a switch in regents here. But in any event, neither of her nominees were confirmed. And a lot of people who are awaiting confirmation were not confirmed. And that set off this a lot of sparring, I think, with Senate Democrats over how they've run the confirmation process. The administration argues it moves much too slowly, that they're not getting to people as quickly as they should.
Andrew, let me ask you this. I've spent what I feel like is years of my life sitting in the Senate Rules Committee. and watching them roll through these confirmations, which they usually do at the beginning of a meeting, and it's like the, you know, the Farm and Livestock Museum, and then they've got, you know, the Game Commission, and they just kind of are like, blah, blah, blah. They spend like 4 minutes on it, and they move on. And yet they have, you know, the Democrats in the Senate have dug their heels in to the trenches here, and they're saying there's no way we're not getting to these regions. We're not even going to look at them. Like, couldn't they just do this in 5 minutes? What's the big deal?
Well, there's an argument to be made that, yes, you could all do this very quickly, right? I mean, we've certainly seen confirmation hearings, including sometimes for people with pretty important jobs in state government who aren't really asked any big questions. There's not a lot of grilling. This isn't Capitol Hill. But at the same time, I have seen some really interesting discussions come out of confirmation hearings. I have, and it is the whole idea behind it is this idea of checks and balances. The Senate has the right and the obligation to, you know,
the Senate has the right to pitch
people.
a political war over control of the UNM Board of Regents. And fight the governor by right. I mean, that's what we're talking about.
And
right?
Let me say the
exactly.
Linda Lopez
comes back to checks and balances, and so they definitely want to preserve that, and anything to do with the UNM Board of Regents is going to be particularly tough.
We have with us on the phone right now Representative Jason Harper, Republican from Rio Rancho. Welcome to the show, Representative.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
We are so glad to have you here. I know that you are, as we've mentioned you a couple times earlier in the show, you're the sponsor of this 432-page tax overhaul bill, which is going to be heard at 9 o'clock. So we're so happy that you're making time for us to talk before the hearing. A lot of people have complained about New Mexico's tax system. We've had them on this show many times to do exactly that. A lot of people who served in the legislature before you have tried to do something about this on both sides of the aisle. But you've been working on this for a long time. You've made a very ambitious effort to radically rewrite the way we collect taxes on sales and services. Democrats said they were not going to look at this at all during this short session, but they changed their minds. You've got this hearing. Were you surprised they said they'd hear it?
Well, kind of. I've been, ever since the regular session ended about 2 months ago, I've been, you know, putting all of the efforts that I could, you know, I've been, you know, staying at my normal job. I work at Sandia Labs. I do research there for a living. And, you know, I've been coming home at 2:30 or 12:30 in the morning, you know, trying to, make a living while also, you know, really working hard to try to make this tax reform something that would be pleasing to both sides of the aisle and address all the concerns that were raised during the regular session. And so I was really confused when the speaker announced a couple days ago that they wanted to hear it. And I called him before he made that announcement and said, well, let's at least talk it through, and I want you to see it and please review it with an open mind first. And then later that, after he agreed to that and said, yeah, let's meet later this afternoon or the next day, he came out and said, well, you know, in the media, we're not going to hear it. And so that confused me. And then, having a hearing now is also just, really a token gesture because it's assigned to two committees. There's no way it's getting out of the session.
Well, you know, it is 432 pages. We talked earlier in the show about how big, ambitious bills tend to move slowly through this legislature unless they are a giant tax package that gets passed in the last 30 minutes of a session, as they did in 2013.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is an argument that this is necessary, it's needed right now, and there's an argument that because of the few things that went wrong with that 2013 tax package, this should be more closely vetted. Don't you think you should do this study, this 90-day study, and come back in January? Look at it.
So great question, and I've heard this argument many times, that this bill is just too big and it's too complex and we can't do it now. The truth of the matter is, of those 430 pages, roughly 350 of them are just changing the name of the tax from gross receipts tax to sales tax. That's it. We're just going through the statutes, and every place it says gross receipts tax, we're striking it and putting sales tax.
Andrew Oxford, we still have you on the line here from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Your office is in the Capitol. You've been padding around and talking to people over the past couple of days here. What are you hearing on the ground? And you don't have to give us names, but what are you hearing on the ground about this tax package?
You know, like we talked about earlier, I mean, I think that there's hesitance to take it on right now. I mean, but I think one thing that's important to keep in mind here is that we're in the middle of a special session right now, and yet there's not really an agreement on, what's going to happen with Representative Harper's bill, what's going to happen with the revenue bills that the legislature passed yesterday. You know, we're in the middle of this session, and it's somewhat strange to be in this point without a real sense of what happens next. Will we see Representative Harper's bill bogged down in the legislative process? Would that mean the governor would veto these other revenue measures? Would that mean the state won't be able to balance the budget for the coming fiscal year? I've heard lawmakers raise the prospect that if that's all the case, if you know, we end up pretty much in the same spot as we were 2 months ago, except with maybe the funding for higher education restored and the funding for the legislature restored. Maybe we're just going to have to stagger into the next fiscal year without either big tax reform or without these tax increases, and hope that we have enough money coming in through a slight recent uptick in oil and gas revenue, a recent uptick in tax collection, and hope that can carry us through, that maybe there isn't coming back to a special session next week or in the next few months. Maybe we wait it out till January. And so really there's a certain there's sort of an uncertainty and almost an absurdity to this session.
Well, that's not unusual. But Representative Harper, you've said that about 300 pages of this bill is just changing the name from gross receipts tax, which doesn't make sense to anybody, to sales tax, which frankly does make sense to people. But tell us, what are some of the actual changes in this bill that you think New Mexicans would appreciate? Just some of the highlights.
Yeah, so thanks. So of the bill that's, roughly 430 pages, roughly 70 are substantive, and what it's doing is taking our gross receipts tax, which really is gross, and changing it to more of a real retail sales tax. Right now in the state, we have a hybrid of a gross receipts tax and a retail sales tax. And our hybrid's a disgusting monster. It's actually the worst elements of gross receipts tax and the worst elements of a sales tax. And what we're trying to do is develop a new hybrid that is the best elements of the gross receipts tax and the best elements of a sales tax. And if I could just kind of paint a picture, we have this, block of Swiss cheese of our tax code with all these carve-outs, exemptions, deductions, credits. And what we're proposing to do is take that block of Swiss cheese and melt it down. We're going to remove all these, special interest carve-outs and, deductions and credits, use that to broaden our tax base, which is good tax policy, helps you stabilize revenues, and you're not, kind of like you have a, not all your eggs in one basket in your 401k or your investments. By broadly taxing everything but at a lower rate, we're able to not cause distortions in the economy. Government doesn't pick winners or losers, and essentially the way we've structured this, most families in New Mexico will see less money coming out of their pockets, and it'll not choke small businesses like our current gross receipts tax does. And heaven forbid we could have some job growth here in New Mexico and help our families that way.
So it sounds like, Representative Harper, the leadership is not going to put this to a final vote during this special session. It looks like if they accomplish what they've said they want to do and they have the numbers to do it, they will send this for a 90-day study and look at it again, either in the regular session or maybe in some special session. Do you think when it comes back, you'll be able to persuade lawmakers to go along with it?
Great question, and I think your assessment of the situation is probably correct. This probably isn't coming out of the House or the Senate this session. And I am concerned about the study. You know, I'm a research engineer. I like data. I like studies. But being up here for 5 years, it's pretty clear to me that whenever the legislature wants to punt on something, they'll do a study. That makes it feel like we're doing something when we're actually not. And we've had so many studies already on this. You know, two blue ribbon taxes, a government commission, you know, New Mexico First back in 2001. And all these studies tell us to do the exact same thing, which is what we're proposing to do here. So, you know, I remain hopeful, and I continue to try to educate and persuade. But I just really think this really is an opportunity lost.
We have to take a short break. Representative, I know you have to run down the hall to hear this bill in a committee right now. Thank you so much for taking this time with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing. Great to chat with you.
Andrew Oxford, we didn't have as much time with you as we'd hoped. Do you have a few more minutes to talk, or do you have to run down the hall?
I've got to run, too. I've got to go exactly where Representative Harper is going.
Okay. Well, go chase him down the hall, and we will talk to you on this show again sometime soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Gwyneth. So, listeners, we're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we want to hear from you about what we just talked about with Representative Harper, this idea of overhauling the sales tax. Representative Harper wants to take the best parts of different systems and make it more efficient and more fair. But a special session costs taxpayers about $50,000 a day. Do you want lawmakers to just stay and hear this thing and do it now? Or do you think they should study it and come back and do it in a regular session? We want to hear from you. The number is toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. If you're watching this on Twitter, you can tag us in a tweet at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Ever watch a motorized bicycle go by and dreamed of owning one? Well, this may be the month your dream comes true. Moto Psychos 505 in Albuquerque donated a motorized bike that goes 30 miles per hour and gets 100 miles per gallon. It's worth $300. Somebody who already registered this year, who returns the mailing, or who gives at KUNM.org will win the bike on May 31st. Or one of four pies from Pioneer. Watch your mail.
This month, we go to the Navajo Nation to sample the debut album, Gratitude, by Diné flute player Jonah Little Sunday. We hope you'll join us for our visit with our May music maker, Jonah Little Sunday, on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. I'm here with Trip Jennings, the executive director of New Mexico In Depth and a veteran watcher of the New Mexico State Legislature. Let's hear from some listeners now. We have Eric on the line in Albuquerque. Eric, good morning and welcome to the show. Eric, do we have you there? We left Eric hanging for a little while. I'm sorry. But we do have Annie. Annie, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
So you want to talk about taxes?
Yes. I'm the director of the Center for Nonprofit Excellence based in Albuquerque. And my program, which is out of the United Way of Central New Mexico, has been working really closely with some of our funding partners around the state, including the Santa Fe Community Foundation, Albuquerque Community Foundation, New Mexico Community Foundation, the New Mexico Association of Grantmakers, Think New Mexico, among others, because together as funding agencies and capacity-building agencies for nonprofits, we are concerned about Representative Harper's bill, about the implications and unintended consequences that, you know, would be really detrimental to nonprofits around the state. And so I'm sorry that I called in at a point when he was off the line because I wanted to ask him a question. So at this point, I'll just make a statement rather.
But Annie, let me ask you really quickly. Can you give me a specific example of how you think his bill could harm the efforts of nonprofits?
Sure, yes. There is a lot of concern about small to mid-sized nonprofits around the state that specifically have worked really hard to build social enterprise models that, you know, for example, they have, you know, they sell something on the side that's not, that helps to sustain their fundraising functions throughout the year. So, like, I don't want to call out any nonprofits specifically, but one that comes to mind is, you know, ARCA is a big organization in our community. They sell poinsettias at the holidays throughout the year. So
they'd have to pay more tax. They'd have to pay sales tax on those things.
Exactly. That's what the concern is. Is that what about those guys? What about the small to mid-sized nonprofits that are doing their darndest to weather the storm, you know, to build these sustainable social enterprise models for their nonprofits? You know, by funders, nonprofits are told to operate like businesses. You can't be reliant on grants. You can't be reliant on donations. What are you going to do when the market fluctuates? What are you going to do when that grant, you know, stops?
Annie, I see Tripp Jennings nodding his head because he runs a nonprofit that's been told those exact same things. Thank you for pointing that out. I want to get to a few more callers quickly, but that's a very good point about this bill. And when we come back to talk about it next, we'll bring that up. Thank you, Annie. We also have Linda in Santa Fe. Linda, good morning and welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to comment from the perspective of the many nonprofits that I represent and healthcare providers. One of our concerns about this bill is that we do have an exemption now, and particularly with the nonprofits, if this bill were to go through, they would have to pay gross receipts tax or sales tax now on their grants. So the state gives them $100,000, and then they have to pay 6%, 8% back to the state and to the municipalities and counties. So that's very problematic.
Linda, thank you for bringing that up. Thank you very much. This is the kind of thing we would hear if this bill spent some time in a regular session and had all of these hearings. Folks in the committees, lawmakers who sit in these committees would have to listen to this and be accountable to folks like Linda and her clients. Let's talk to Jackie in Santa Fe now. Jackie, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. So two quick comments. One is I absolutely support a gas tax for New Mexico. I think it would completely change the dynamic of how dangerous our roads are. It would be much friendlier for pedestrians and for cyclists. So that's the first comment. And the second comment is, having worked in state government, I would say that no administrator should make more than the average salary of a staff member in that department. We have administrators who are making at least eight times what a staff member makes, and we have incredibly competent employees in state government. And I think the administrators can be, not all of them, we have some very good administrators, but often we have egos that get in the way and people who are just working to make money and get out and get to the next job and pad the resume. And it really causes us a lot of money in the tax base.
Jackie.
So, very controversial, perhaps, but
well,
that's how I see it.
There's probably a lot of people working in state government now going, hey, wait a minute. And probably some administrators saying, get this lady off the phone, stat.
But I'm sure.
Thank you for that. We'll chew on it a little bit. We also have Bill on the line this morning. Bill, good morning and welcome to the show.
Gwyneth, this is Bill McCamley. I'm the chair of the Labor Economic Development Committee. We'll be hearing Representative Harper Bill in about 8 minutes.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling in to tell us that. We're going to put on the live stream as soon as we get out of here and watch it. But let me ask you, while you're on the phone, Bill McCamley, a Democrat in the House from Las Cruces area, what do you think about this bill, about this gross receipts tax overhaul? Do you like it? Do you like the idea? What about the specifics?
So there's some major problems with it. The first being, we got it at 4 o'clock around that time yesterday, and it's 430 pages. So So I've been working with our Legislative Finance Council to go over some of the details of the bill. And while Representative Harper's strategy here is fairly good, we do want to get rid of a lot of these exemptions, deductions, and credit in the state and lower the overall rate. The problem here are there's some ideological choices in that bill that were made. So in order to get rid of, to lower that rate, we have to raise taxes in other places. In this bill, the governor and Representative Harper have chosen to raise costs on sick people. They will put full GRT, full taxes back on all health care providers. And furthermore, they will double the health care portion of the premium tax. So this is the tax everybody pays on their insurance. So when you look at what Trump Care is doing, and the CBO report just came out on that yesterday at the federal level, where it's showing that 16 million more people will lose their insurance next year. That includes sicker, older people, women who are pregnant. What this bill does is pile onto that. Instead, what we could have done in order to get to where he wanted to go was look at things like tax carve-outs for out-of-state corporations, tax carve-outs for oil and gas companies, coal miners, uranium miners. We could have actually looked at a 1% for the 1% income tax, in which we could have brought in the money and lowered the rate. But the ideological choices that were made to kind of lower this rate and put the burden on sick people is something that is going to be very hard for me and many of the other Democrats to support.
Representative McCamley, thank you so much for calling in and giving your perspective on this tax overhaul. You got 5 minutes to get to that meeting.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for hearing me.
Take care. So, Trip Jennings, we have a few minutes before the end of the show to chew this over. You know, the putting the tax back on nonprofit hospitals, folks argue, is a fairness issue when all the other hospitals and providers pay this tax. And I think if I'm trying to put myself in Representative Harper's shoes and make his case, I would say this is part of broadening the base and raising this tax just a little bit on a huge number of people and a whole lot of money. So it's a small, easy way to collect a whole bunch of taxes. Am I making that up?
No, but I think the game is much larger than New Mexico, which by which I mean there's uncertainty around health care. And what Congress passes is going to affect every state, and it's going to affect hospitals. And all these hospitals, for-profit and nonprofits, are sitting there kind of going, are we going to get creamed by certain things around Medicaid, around this other stuff? And they're playing defense right now. And this is complicated. What Representative McCamley I want to move to what he said there. The tax code is really complicated, and it's a fascinating thing because it's a hidden budget and there are choices that are made.
I think the interesting thing that we heard from our callers just now as a preview of the debates over this is that the political lines are not clear. You know, mm-hmm. What we heard was some groups that are traditionally liberal oriented, the nonprofits, folks like that, and complaining about having to pay higher taxes. And yet these are often the same groups who complain about the tax credits and rebates that, for example, the oil and gas industry.
This is all about the whose sacred cows get gored.
Yes.
That's
so
what this
I think
is about.
What we saw today was that the knives will come out for this bill when it is heard. And certainly, as Representative McCamley said,
It's going to be an alley fight.
They're going to want to change it. Even if everyone agrees pretty much something needs to be done, I don't think there's any agreement on what that is. Thank you so much, Trip, for being with us today. And thank you all for joining us on the KUNM call-in show. Thanks to our guests that we had on earlier today, Representative Patricia Lundstrom, Andrew Oxford from the Santa Fe New Mexican, Representative Jason Harper, and our unexpected guest, Representative Bill McCamley. We have posted links to the information we discussed today on our website. Check them out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website this morning. You can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows there. If you want to give us a comment about today's show, email it to us, callinshow@kunm.org. You can also chat with us on Facebook, just search for KUNM Radio, or you can follow the newsroom on Twitter, @KUNM News. Thanks to Marino Spencer, who engineered the show today, Anna Landy screened your calls, Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show, Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.